Welcome to another episode of the Lemonade Podcast. It is your host, Stephi Will. Stephanie, you know, either or is perfectly fine. Hell, you can do Misty Nice Twist Out and I'd be perfectly fine with that. It has been 2 weeks since I last spoke to you all, and a busy 2 weeks it has been. It's Black History Month, so of course we're busy, and it should be busy. I don't know if you caught the Grammys last week, unfortunately. I was tricked into watching it, although all of the people of color parts of the Grammys, as usual, were fantastic. Beyonce, of course, did perform, and she looks very, very pregnant, and she still did a really amazing job because, I mean, it's Beyonce. She had those twins in there flipping, I'm pretty sure, when she tilted back in that chair, but Beyonce, of course, showed up and showed out, and so did Bruno Mars. Like, I honestly was not a Bruno Mars fan maybe 2 or 3 years ago, but lately with 24 Karat Magic, is that the name of the album? I think so. Anyway, I love it, and he did a phenomenal job. His Prince tribute was actually really nice, although the audience was as stiff as a board because it wasn't a BET Awards, and they definitely wasted bringing out the time because nobody hit those steps, which makes no sense. Like, I don't know how you have them up there performing that song, like, nobody hits those. I'm like, how do you not hit those steps? So the Grammys, as usual, is put Black folks on display, but don't reward them. And of course, Beyonce did not win Album of the Year, which, whatever, I guess. Adele got it. And I'm going to be real honest with y'all. I have only heard the song Hello, the chorus. I haven't heard it in its entirety. I love Adele, no shade. I just haven't really listened to it. I was in love with the album 21, though. The album was amazing, everything. I have not heard 25. But I'm not surprised that Adele won. She's just as talented artist, but it's just that, I mean, we all know what the Lemonade album did, right? Like, it was a work of art, period. But of course, she didn't win, which is interesting because she didn't win, and she bended genres. The same thing that Beck did, what was it, 3 or 4 years ago when he won. So now she's not being rewarded for it. It's just really interesting. Just basically bullshit. So yeah, I don't know why I even got my little hopes up and thinking that she was going to win Album of the Year because I should have known better. It's the Grammys, so I guess it is what it is. So I guess I kind of started a little early in this week or these last 2 weeks, and those lemons ain't fresh. So moving on from the Grammys, Milo Fagnopoulos, I don't know how, I mean, that's going to be his last name. So he finally, his book deal was finally dropped. And this is because I don't know who, but someone released something that I think was already out there, but they just made it so that the public could actually pay attention to it. And it was just him pretty much, you know, being fine with pedophilia and trying to get really some semantics and talking about basically, you know, men helping young boys until like feel comfortable in their sexual. It got really weird and just disgusting. So he was, His book deal was dropped, and it's not because like they came to some like moral high road. It's numbers. Numbers weren't going to add up, so they said no. And then the Breitbart actually had him resign. 13 employees actually, or he was let go or he resigned. Either way, he's not there anymore because 13 employees threatened to leave. So what a bad week for him. He was just on Bill Maher. Trying to look all cute. And that's when Larry Wilmore told him to go fuck himself. You know, Larry Wilmore really needs his own show, a podcast, whatever. If whatever it is, I'll watch. Because I did watch the Nightly Show, whatever it was. I definitely watched that. and caught it whenever I could. So, I mean, if he does and has something else, a podcast, whatever, like, count me in. I'm there because Larry Wilmore is a national treasure. So that's what happened to Mr. Milo Fucknopoulos. And just, it took him talking about pedophilia and being a pedophile pretty much for that to be the thing that we were like, oh, nope, no, we draw the line there. Not just being a total around racist, bigot, sexist, asshat. None of that, huh? Okay, well, I see how things work. It's only when folks feel like they're threatened directly, white men, that they've then take course in action. It's just the way that it works. It's shitty, it's horrible, but that's the message I got from it, and I'm pretty sure a lot of you got from it as well. So, but anyways, he's out of a job, so good luck. More Iron Fist drama. Because it's like never going to end. So Finn Jones pretty much went all lies matter. He definitely did. Or at least that's how I read it. And I really don't know how you could really honestly read it. And so there was an article that was posted on BuzzFeed on February 24th, which was a Friday. And it's pretty much, you know, Finn saying that Danny Rand is not a white savior. And I'm just like, what? So, like, what is he then? Like, what? He's definitely a white savior. And then he goes on to say that, you know, 8 episodes in, they bring in other components and people into the show to just kind of touch on and I guess make commentary on things like inclusion and diversity. And it's just like a whole 8 episodes go by before y'all actually do that. Okay. All right. That sounds like a fantastic idea. So I'm going to, so what else? Okay. So I'm going to read a passage from you all. And let me just go ahead and read it. Just because we have this skin, this color skin, it doesn't mean we have to conform to preconceived notions of our culture, Jones said of the scene. We are human beings on this planet, and we are all individually have different attributes. We're not stereotypes, and hopefully that's what the show does. Hopefully the show doesn't, I don't think it does, deal in stereotypes, which I think people are worried about. No, that's not what anybody was worried about. And this is actually taken from basically what this is from, and I'll read what I guess he was kind of speaking to, was the show plays with the perception of Danny early on in one of the first scenes opposite Colleen Wing, dojo owner, master martial artist, and Danny's eventual partner in crime fighting. When trying to get a job at Wing's dojo, Ram begins speaking Mandarin to her as a way to impress her. And she tries to respond as best she can before stopping him to say that she's only fluent in English and Japanese. So what I just read to you prior to that, let me read it one more time. Just because we have this skin color, it doesn't mean we have to conform to preconceived notions of our culture, Jones said of the scene. We are human beings on this planet, and we're all individual at different attributes. We're not stereotypes, and hopefully that's what the show does. Hopefully the show doesn't, I don't think it does, deal in stereotypes, which I think people are worried about. Okay, this sounds very All Lives Matter-y to me, and let me tell you why. Because he just went on the whole thing of just because we have this color skin. And I'm just like, okay, dude, for a lot of us, the skin color that we have, it's way beyond that. And I don't know how you know, if you know how stereotypes work, but it works the way where how people perceive you, not necessarily all the time how you perceive yourself. So just because you guys, just because in that moment they touched on Danny making an ass of himself and assuming that Colleen speaks Mandarin, what are we doing? Like, is that the only thing? Because I mean, you 2 cookies for you for this, Glen Coco? What are we doing? And it still sounds All Lives Matter-y to me because it goes on the whole thing of we are all human beings on this earth. And it's just like, okay. But this is not why people were mad and upset about the show. It's because there was a missed opportunity to cast Danny Rand as an Asian American. As an Asian American, because that would have been a chance to be inclusive. And at the same time, you're still able to tell a different story of being an outsider. But this somehow falls on deaf ears for a lot of people, and not understanding that someone can be Asian American and still feel like an outsider if they were to go to somewhere like Kowloon, which is an imaginary freaking city. So I mean, I got into the point where I'm just like, I don't even know what else to say, because when there's someone white caping for this, then, I mean, that's a whole nother thing. But when I see another person of color caping for this, I'm almost kind of confused, because I'm just like, okay, but why would you not want to see inclusion for another person of color? Like, what? I mean, don't run me the whole spiel of, I've been reading this comic since forever and I'm a fan and blah, blah, blah. Well, if you truly were a fan of your fandom, then you would want whatever it was in the best interest of your fandom to bring more fans, to reinvigorate that fandom. So, you know, even that falls flat and short, and is really a horrible excuse and a horrible thing to just, or just really tired to like just lay your hat on. Like, even that, because as I said on Black Comics Chat, if Marvel would have went the route of actually casting an Asian American as Danny Rand, and they're doing this reboot or whatever it is with the Iron Fist comic, and you can see on the first issue that Danny Rand is in the likeness of Finn Jones. Can you imagine if that Danny Rand was in the likeness of an Asian, Asian American? Could you imagine? How many more fans, how much more that would invigorate the whole Iron Fist fandom? Because I can assure you folks will probably go back and read the older copies and maybe possibly fall in love with the original Danny Rand. So it's just, I don't, like, you got to think beyond those gates and let folks in. But I mean, I guess the hill that some people want to die on, and I mean, that's where you want to lay on down, then that's where you want to lay on down. And one more thing, I did see some folks saying that Louis Tan was being unprofessional by liking shady tweets and being shady towards Iron Fist show that he's on and blah, 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 and he won't get any more work. And I'm just like, huh. So of all the things that people do and still get work, this man possibly won't get work because of some tweets that he hasn't even said, like, he just liked. Come on. And then to be, again, a person of color to tell another person of color that they should be thankful to even be a part of something to begin with. Like, what type of coon ass shit is that? What are you doing? So this whole Iron Fist situation has really, honestly and truly, just opened up, I don't know, my eyes, and hopefully the eyes of others too, some really deep-rooted and deep-seated problems that go beyond just Danny not being cast as an Asian American. Like, once again, the reaction to the original reaction is just always much more fascinating, because I'm always intrigued by people's thought process and their logic and what they're willing to, protect or try to make reason and logic for why it's okay when it's really not okay. And it's just, it's amazing. Like, there are definitely some issues that need to be talked about and touched on, because this has just been, it's been simply amazing. It really, honestly, truly has. It has. So, I mean, I don't know. I want to watch the show for Jesslyn Henwett and for Louis Tan, because I feel like, you know, they are going to be the only reason to watch the show and to support them. But I mean, knowing Iron Fist, I mean, it looks like Colleen probably does show up in the show pretty early on, but I feel like Louis probably doesn't show up till the show is damn near over. So I don't know. Like, I haven't seen Doctor Strange. perfectly fine with that. I don't plan on seeing Doctor Strange anytime soon. So, I mean, it's a, you can still live and not watch something that Marvel has put out. Like, life is still very possible. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm really kind of torn because I would like to support it just really for those two actors and also Rosario Dawson. But at the same time, the way that people are just really caped for this whole decision to just make Danny white has just really turned me off and just, I don't know, made me feel away. So I'm still thinking about it. I do have something planned, but I don't know. I am still, I'm still really honestly on the fence. So moving on to something that, well, somebody got handed some lemons that wasn't so fresh. And that was Nicki Minaj, because She Third on a Saturday happened and Remy Ma spent a whole 6 minutes and 57 seconds pretty much telling Nicki Minaj, fuck you. And it was glorious. It really was. And it was really nice to see female MCs alive and well. And it just made the little hip hop head in me very happy. And if you want to hear more about me talking about that, I actually teamed up with Shannon from Nerds of Prey, and it's actually on not only the Lemonade Podcast Patreon, but also the Nerds of Prey Podcast Patreon. So if you are a patron of either one of us, you listen to it. If you're not, go ahead and subscribe, become a patron so you can get that and a bunch of other goodies that are offered on both of our Patreons. So I'll have the information for, of course, my Patreon and then also their, the Nerds of Prey Patreon as well. You know, support Black creators. It's a nice thing to do. All right. So moving on, comics, I really don't have anything new to talk about because, yeah, I really don't. The only thing is, like, I just want to reiterate because I just got done with researching the hell out of Dora Milaje for Misty Knight's Uninformed Afro and World of Wakanda. If you're not reading it and you have the means to do so, do it, because it is a very beautiful, constructed story. It pulls you right in. Roxane Gay is a phenomenal writer. Like, she even brings back Thought Bubbles, which I haven't seen in a little while. So, I mean, the Black queer women representation is there, and it's just, there's a lot going on. There's a lot of world building that has continued to go on for Wakanda, which Ta-Nehisi Coates started with his BP run, and it's, I'm at a loss for words. Like, it's really that good. It's probably one of my most favorite things that I've been reading as of late. And another thing that has really been good as of late is Superwoman, which is written by Phil Jimenez. And I don't read a lot of DC, but I do. And this is definitely a DC book that is in my pull list. So, and we get like a good decent amount of Natasha Irons, aka Steel, aka the Riri Williams before Riri Williams was even a thought. So if you haven't checked out Superwoman, that is something that I do recommend from DC. Motor Crush, I think that's Image Comics, and I've only read issue one, but I think it's a series that I'm really going to be able to sink my teeth in, and I really can't wait to see where it goes. I believe they're only 2 issues in. So I have issue 2. I just have not had a chance to, like, you know, really get a chance to start reading it. So yeah, like, Motocross, check it out. And last but not least, this is an old one from like 2010, but Doom War, because once again, I told you guys I was doing research for Dora Milaje. And Doom War, I vaguely remember reading when it first came out, but this time it's very fresh, and I totally forgot how beautiful the artwork was, and also how great. I mean, it's a really fun series. I'm not a fan of how it ends per se. Like, I just kind of feel like it fizzled out. But I mean, issues 1 through 5 and half of 6, so great. We get Storm. We get a Sue Storm from the Fantastic Four, who is standing for Storm, which is fun. I mean, you know what? Can we talk about how great Sue Storm is. Like, she doesn't get enough credit, and I need to see some more Sue Storm kicking it and hanging out with other women, specifically Storm, because actually that would be a dope little four issue series, just Storm and Sue Storm, the two Storms, just out handling business. I would love to see that. And actually even throw in She-Hulk and Monica Rambeau, and that could just be the squad. I don't know what they would be doing. Doesn't even matter to me. They could be shopping for all I care, but I would love to read that and see it. So, I mean, you know, anyone's listening, just go ahead, put pen to paper. So Doom War, if you have not checked that out ever, it's written by Jonathan Mayberry. Like I said, the artwork is phenomenal, and it's a fun read. It really honestly truly is. Okay, so let's talk about movies and shows, and I don't have too much really on it because at the time of this recording, the Oscars has not happened yet, and so at the time that I'm recording this, the Oscars has not happened yet, and I am still trying to convince myself to watch because I just don't know if I can handle another upset. Like, I really don't. I just don't know what I'll do. But so Riverdale is a show that has finally started airing. It's the only show that I've actually in a little while, other than Married to Medicine and Real Housewives of Atlanta. Look, I like my reality TV. But anyways, it's the first show in a little while that I've actually gone out of my way to make sure that I'm watching it the night that it airs. So, because like I'm pulling out the rabbit ears for it because we don't have cable. We stream in my house. So I'm pulling out the rabbit ears just so that I can watch Riverdale. But it has been so good. They've done a really great job of, you know what? It's kind of like if Twin Peaks had a baby with a 90210 or something like to that extent, or like a Melrose Place to that extent, where Twin Peaks had a baby with somebody. And this is the show that was birthed. It's got a creepy vibe to it. And at the same time, it's just messy enough. Like, I'm not really a fan of a lot of CW shows. So I was really on the fence about this before it came out. But Riverdale has been actually just really interesting and beautiful to see how they have married the Archie comics with, bringing it to the screen. Because if you're familiar with Archie comics, you know, they always have this old school feel to it. But if you picked up a Archie Digest or something as of late, they, even though it's got this old school feel to it, they still incorporate what is currently going on today. So like you'll see cell phones, you'll see an iPod player or something like that. Like you'll see the newer things infused with the older, which that's one of the reasons why I've always enjoyed Archie comics, because it's just kind of got like that nostalgia to it. And they're just fun. They're just really, really fun. Yeah. And the show Riverdale has done a great job of mirroring how the Archie comics work in that sense, and marrying the old with the new. And like the way that they talk is still kind of like, geez. And, you know, they're still meeting at the chocolate shop and things like that. And it's just, it's good. Like, it really honestly truly is. And still trying to figure out who killed Jason Blossom. It's pretty much kind of like a whodunit this season, which has not waned yet. Like, I'm still interested. I am still invested. And I still want to know, like, it's been enough twists and turns where it hasn't been too far-fetched, but at the same time, just enough to keep you on your toes and interested. So Riverdale, if you haven't checked it out yet, it is worth your time. I will say that. So Star Wars, the Han Solo movie released a picture and all right. So it's like, basically if it was a cookie, it would be a plain cookie with one chocolate chip and a hair on it. And by that, you've got all the white cast members, Donald Glover, and then Chewbacca, and not one woman of color in sight. And of course we all had something to say about it. And of course, folks had stuff to say about it too. And basically, if you can imagine the responses, it's just, you know, why don't y'all go make your own, and so on and so forth. Just the same old tired ass responses. And then someone was like, you know, well, Tandy Newton is also a part of it too. But it's just like, okay, well, one, she was in talks at the time when this photo was released. And also, optics matter. So if you are showing us a photo and it looks super white, which is one black guy and a hairy guy, what else are we supposed to think? Like, optics matter. And I'm really getting tired of hearing, well, that's not everybody. Well, okay, well, if the other folks that are supposed to be in the movie, and you understand as a studio or whatever, how important being inclusive and including, you know, all that is a part of the film, and you're, and I understand, like, you can't have, like, the film, the picture, have all of these characters in one shot. I get that. But we know the track record with Star Wars, and it has not been kind to women of color, at least not on this, on the big screen. The comics and also the animation has been a lot more giving than the movies, but, like, we know what it is. So why not just wait until Tandy can take a picture? If she isn't a heavily CGI'd character, we still don't have the information. We still don't know. And it's still a possibility that that could be the case. So yeah, like, we'll see, but I'm not holding my breath. I honestly, truly am not. All right. And if you didn't know, the movie Get Out was, just came out this past Friday, which would be February 24th. And hopefully you got a chance to see it, because if not, you've been hearing nothing but great things about it. And I am someone who can say that those things are very well deserved. Like, the movie is definitely backing up the hype. I actually seen the movie on Saturday, and it's so good. Like, it's so good. I'm like, I don't want to reveal any spoilers, but Jordan Peele just really came out of left field with this, and in the best way possible. The movie really is scary because it's real life for a lot of us. The microaggressions. I am not in an interracial relationship, but I would imagine that somebody that is, it probably might have been a little triggering for them, because it does give some insight into that. So, and there is a plot twist to it. We're not even necessarily a plot twist, but there is a moment in the film where it's just like, oh shit. In fact, while watching the film, you're probably going to say, oh shit, at least 8 to 9 times. So, yeah, so, like, Get Out got 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is damn near unheard of for horror movies. I think only maybe 5 of them in the past have gotten them. And Leo from Black Comic Shack said that he felt like this would be one of those horror movies that would get an Oscar recognition. And I have to agree that I have to say that I agree with him, because, yeah, it's that good. So I really hope for, I guess, moving forward, because this is a Blumhouse, you know, distributed by them. I hope that this opens the door for other Black creatives to tell their stories and to have them produced, I mean, and distributed by Blumhouse. That would be huge, because, you know, also Black women have stories that they would like to tell as well, and have, you know, widely available to such a large and broad audience, because horror genre is just a very beautiful genre to play around with and have social commentary with. And actually, I spoke to Ashley from Graveyard Shift Sisters. So that episode will actually be out 2 weeks from now. You guys get a chance to hear us talk about a little bit about that and everything that she has going on. But yeah, Get Out doing well is something that just is so important on so many different levels. And it really looks like it's going to run away at the box office and actually do much better than that one movie where that white guy is in China doing stuff, which didn't do too well last week. So yeah, if you haven't seen Get Out, I really do hope that you get a chance and opportunity to see it in theaters, because I haven't seen a Black movie like this in a long time, and a horror movie like this in a long time. So I really do hope you get a chance to see it. And last but not least, there was something that came out about a Nightwing movie being in production or in talks, one of the two. And I mean, I guess I'm here for it, because it's not Batman. So, you know, whatever they do, just hope that the actor has a nice, tight, round behind to fill out that suit. So, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I have no investment. Now, I don't have a dog in a fight for the Nightwing movie. So to be honest, I just don't want to see any Batman spill pearl bullshit going on. So, hey, if DC can get this right, then more power to them. All right, guys. So I actually have spoke to Joseph P. Illich a couple of weeks back, and you guys are going to get a chance to listen to our conversation. He's talking about Catalyst Prime and the work that he's doing at Lion Forge, and just really getting ready and getting us ready for this release of Catalyst Prime, an event that is just going to start this amazing universe with superheroes, and it's inclusive. So, I mean, of course, I'm here for it. So I hope you do enjoy our conversation, and hopefully, you know, not too much happens between now and the next time I talk to you all. And thank you again for joining me on the Lemonade, and I hope you all have a great one. Hey guys, so this is a special episode of The Lemonade. I have with me I don't even know how to put this, because this man is just one of a kind. And honestly, if you don't know who he is, then I don't know what rock you've been living under. But I have with me the wonderful Joseph P. Illich. How are you today, sir?
I'm okay. Thank you very much for that intro. Now I got to live up to it. So, okay. No pressure.
No pressure at all.
But I'm going to do my best.
All right. So I got to ask you,
sure.
What is your origin story?
Wow. Okay. So I'll kind of summarize it, right? In very basics, started reading comics when I was a kid. My mom would buy me comics when I was in the second grade. When I was in the fourth grade, my aunt introduced me to X-Men. When I got out of college, I interned at a company called Milestone Media, which was the first Black-owned comic book company to have a publishing deal with a top publisher, which is DC Comics. And from Milestone, I went to DC Comics, and I started editing as a member of the Batman editorial group. After that, I kind of went on a Bruce Wayne exodus, where I went to kind of developed some skills for a while, and I came back to comics working for a company called Archaea. And then after that, I started writing columns and doing interviews, and that eventually led me to where I am now, which is I am the senior editor for Lion Forge Comics, and we're launching a new superhero universe this May under the name Catalyst Prime.
So, which I'm extremely excited for, like, you don't even know, just the look of it. I am a sci-fi fanatic, so just the look of it, people in space period just, I don't know, just makes me insanely excited. I don't know why, but what can you tell us about Catalyst Prime that, for those that unfortunately maybe not, they don't know, I don't know why, because I try to post about it all the time when I can, but can you tell the folks a little bit about it?
Sure. So Catalyst Prime basically starts off as a free comic book day one-shot. So free comic book day is May 6th, all across the nation. So it starts off with a one-shot, which is co-written by myself and Christopher Priest, who's well-known for writing DC Comics' Deathstroke. And he did the longest run on Marvel's Black Panther, which I think was 5 years. And it tells the story of a suicide mission in which there's an asteroid that's going to collide with Earth, and 5 astronauts and a person who represents mission control, so that's 6 people from different cultures and nations, basically are going to go into space and try to prevent this asteroid from hitting Earth. And the consequences of that basically lead to the rise of superhuman beings on Earth. And so after the Catalyst Prime one-shot, throughout the year we're going to launch a different series practically each month, between May and December. And then by the end of the year, you're going to see the 7 titles that basically make up the first phase of the Catalyst Prime universe. And one of the things that I really like about the universe is the strong women characters that we're setting up for it. And the company that is responsible for funding the mission to stop the asteroid is called the Foresight Corporation. And the person who runs the Foresight Corporation is a Mexican woman named Lorena Payan. So, okay. Yeah, I just like the fact that we're introducing some really complex women characters right out of the gate that are going to be integral to this universe as it evolves.
You know, I'm all here for that. So, and actually, I wanted to ask you a little bit about the inclusiveness of Lion Forge and also the team working on Catalyst Prime. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because, so we have a lot of different creators, whether it's writer, artist, letterer, inker, colorist, from different backgrounds, a number of them outside the United States. And for me, it's pretty easy, right? Because the comic book industry and the pool of comic book creators is diverse. So to be inclusive is easy. You know what's hard? It's hard to be exclusive. Because you would have to literally try to exclude the Black people, the Asian people, the Latinos, the people of the LGBTQ community. You would have to try to do that. So inclusiveness for me was easy because I know a lot of people, there are a lot of good creators, and they come from different backgrounds. And for Lion Forge, what we believe in is comics for everyone. So my feeling with the Catalyst Prime superhero universe is everyone is invited. You know, this is something that you can get in on the ground floor and you can start the journey now. There is no back library of decades of continuity where you have to try to figure out, is this the right origin? Is this the right origin? Is this person fat? Is this person thin? Is this person dark-skinned? Now they're light-skinned? There is no confusion because you're basically starting today. And I think there's something exciting to that. I think there's something exciting for readers and certainly something exciting for the creators.
I as a reader, I totally agree with that. With Misty Knight's Uninformed Afro, when I've had to go all the way back to 60s and 70s to read on some of these women, and like you just said, so-and-so was thin at this point, but now they're fat or vice versa. It's a headache sometimes. So it's refreshing to be able to just start from jump with something and grow with it. So I'm excited, and I really hope other people are too.
Thank you. We've been getting a really good response so far. And for a while, we had to hold back on the information. And then at New York Comic Con was when we announced the name of the line, various creators, Amy Chu, Christopher Priest, Brandon Thomas, David Walker, Sheena Howard, Joe Casey. These are some of the writers, Alex DeCampi, Ramon Govea. So they make up the Catalyst Prime writers room. So in a way, we treat it like a television series where you have a writers room and all of them basically come up with fleshing out basically like 18 months to 2 years of events in the Catalyst Prime universe, and then everyone has their book in which they contribute to that. So that kind of creativity where you get a bunch of people in a room and they're sharing the responsibility, it creates a better sense of leadership. For myself, it creates better friendships among the creators. And so the victory and the accomplishment is a shared one. It's not different people in rooms all alone doing their thing. It's kind of like we're all in this together.
That's so dope. If I had, you know, if there was a collection plate right now, I probably would have threw a little something in there.
Oh, man. It's, you know, it's not a sermon. It's just that, you know, like.
I know, but it's just hearing that, though, and just knowing the state of, I guess, the comic industry as a reader, as a consumer, to hear something like that, that just makes me excited. Like that tells me that the stories that we're going to get are going to be not only thoughtful, but just something different because, you know, like you just said, everyone is working together and the cohesiveness, I can't wait for it.
Yeah, thank you. It's something It's the kind of editorial culture that I was brought up on when I was at Milestone and trained under Dwayne McDuffie, when I was at DC Comics and trained under Denny O'Neill as a Batman editor. So the idea of teamwork is something that I believe in. And, you know, throughout the comic book industry in the last like 5 years, editors have gotten a bad rap. And so what I try to do as an editor is work with the creators. And if we have a situation where you believe something differently than I do, then I want to hear it. I say, state your case. Let's talk about it. And let's see how we can get to the common ground in which you feel that you're creatively fulfilled. And I feel like we're looking out for the universe and looking out for the company. So that's what I'm trying to foster here. And so far it's been working out really well. And so I'm just fortunate to have a good team of creators who are on board this great endeavor with me.
So as they're on their way to save the Earth from an asteroid, you guys are pretty much, seems kind of metaphoric to me.
You know, I'll tell you, I'll try not to drop anything, but there is a character in the story, and this is one of the astronauts, and this character has a conversation with her mother, and the mother's basically like, maybe the world's supposed to end right now. Like, things are bad. Maybe this is supposed to be, and we should just let it happen. And the person says, I can't do that. I have to fight, right? The human instinct is to fight back against anything, even those mm-hmm. things that seem impossible. So, you know, in the face of Armageddon and the end of everything as we know it, you know, these people are going to try to do the impossible. And there are consequences, right? There are consequences mm-hmm. for being a hero. There are consequences for going out in space. You know, once you leave the atmosphere of Earth, you're dealing with a bunch of things you don't understand. But human beings are not deterred by boundaries. You know, it's at the core of the human race that we want to shatter every boundary that is presented to us. And so I feel like this story is metaphorical in the sense that humanity won't die, right? Or it's gonna go down fighting, you know. And you know, you as a fan of science, one thing I like about this universe is that I like the fact that science is gonna be a major part of it, because when I look at other superhero universes, it's hard to reconcile that they're super science, but then there's still AIDS, famine, mm-hmm. and all these other things, right? So yeah. I think in our world, if there are these things that seem like paradoxes, you're going to know why, right? And that's important.
You wouldn't believe.
Right? Because, come on, man. Because, you know, you mentioned Misty Knight. And Misty Knight, you know, for people who know me, Misty Knight is one of my favorite characters in comic books. And I think about Misty Knight as a character and just how she's been bounced around all over the place. But I also think about like her arm, right? Like, so Misty Knight has this technological arm and Tony Stark created that, right? Since mm-hmm. she got that arm, how many times has Tony upgraded his armor? Like, Tony is able to fight Thanos, right?
Right, and her arm keeps getting cut off.
It's the same arm, right? It's like Homegirl can't get an upgrade. Like, Homegirl can call Tony Stark. Misty herself, Misty Knight, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., can't get an upgrade on her arm. See, these are the kinds of things I'm talking about. Doesn't make sense.
No, not a one. Not one damn one.
Yeah, I have a problem with the absence of logic and things like this.
All right. To switch gears real quick, because I just have to, because I know that you worked on Batman No Man's Land, which I actually purchased and I'm going to be reading very soon. How do you tolerate Batman slander?
Wow.
Because I'm real good for it.
Okay.
I love him though.
So here's the thing. It's becoming harder and harder for me to reconcile the Batman universe. Now, I'm a big fan of the Christopher Nolan Batman trilogy films. So I believe in Batman as part of a statement on the willingness or the lack of willingness to make a difference in your community, mm-hmm. right? But when you're talking about the Batman comic book universe, so you got this guy, the Joker, and all he does is kill people and kill people and kill people and kill people and kill people. And he still gets to live? Like, right. Really? Like, okay, so I get that the Batman wouldn't kill him because, you know, Batman's mom was a social worker and his father was a doctor, so he believes that all life is sacred. But the world court wouldn't kill the Joker the same way like it killed Saddam Hussein. So then I got a problem with that. And someone out there is saying, well, Batman's just a comic book, silly. And I'm like, well, Batman isn't treated like a comic book.
Right.
If you look at the way the Batman stories are written, if you look at the kinds of things that Scott Snyder has been doing, it's not comic booky. It's not the kind of quintessential DC universe that Darwin Cook did in The New Frontier. It's supposed to be like some real deal stuff. And in a world like that, I can't reconcile that the Joker continues to live. So it's really hard for me to accept the Batman universe these days. I love some of the characters. You know, I love Cassandra Cain. I like Duke Thomas, although I think he's very underutilized at this point. I love Batwoman. Kate Kane, I love her.
Yeah, same here.
She's one of my favorites. But, you know, in general, I'm not finding the universe super engaging these days. I mean, the thing about No Man's Land when we did it is we kind of did something new where basically the idea that Gotham was cut off from the rest of the world and reduced into a feudal society, and basically the citizens had to fight back and the legend of the Batman had to be reintegrated into society. That was a story about the human condition. And when you take away all the things that help us define civilization, who's a good person, who's a bad person, who has courage, who's afraid, right? Those are the human themes that we dealt with in A Year of Batman, by separating it from the Justice League of America and all these other things. And so I felt like in that situation, the things that we did made sense. We were telling a different type of story. And in a lot of ways, I don't feel like No Man's Land has been surpassed. And I don't say that because I was involved. I say that honestly because on its merit, as in its scope and in its accomplishments, I don't feel like it's been surpassed yet.
See, and this is why I'm so sorry that I'm late to the party and even reading No Man's Land, but I can't wait for it because that's pretty much what I've read in the reviews and heard from other people. So I'm looking forward to it.
Well, hope you like it. DC has been good enough to put out 4 volumes, which basically collect the core story that took place over a year. So it's cool that years later you can enter it now. You know,
exactly.
And that's part of what's great about the comic book industry, the fact that these stories have a potential publication way beyond when they originally were published.
Yeah, because a lot of these stories, when you go back and you read them, you know, stuff that's been published way back, you know, 80s and 70s, and you read them now currently, and just to kind of see how they still sync up, are the issues that are being talked about still relevant? Because unlike some folks like to believe, you know, comics have always been political in some way.
Absolutely, so, right.
Yeah.
Absolutely, so, okay. Right.
And I mean, and I just read, Giant Size issue number 1 for Monica Rambeau, the one shot that Dwayne McDuffie wrote. And I mean, beautiful is that book?
Yeah. Dwayne, you know, God rest his soul. Like, I feel like with certain writers, you can look at their body of work and you can tell what a person cared about.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can look at Dwayne's body of work and you can tell he believed that things could be better, that humanity and human beings were capable of amazing things, and that at the end of the day, it's about family and friends.
Yes.
You can look through all of his stuff, and you can see that. And you talk about someone like Monica Rambeau, that's a character with so much heart, you know? And that was something that he really brought out in that character, beyond the sass,
mm-hmm.
and beyond the aesthetic beauty. Like, his, like, she had heart, the same way like Rocket from Icon had heart, the yes. same way that, you know, Hardware, Curtis Metcalf had heart. Like, these characters have a, they have a core that really speaks to us. And that's why we connect with them. And that's part of, you know, my mandate with Catalyst Prime. When I'm talking to the writers, when we go through these scripts, I say, I want a character that I give a damn about. If you can give me a character that I care about, I'm convinced that readers will come along for the ride. Because they want to see what this person goes through. Even when this person fails, they can identify with that person and know that, you know, some days we all fail, but the courage comes in getting up the next day and deciding tomorrow's going to be today's going to be a better day than yesterday was. And I can make that possible. I just got to get out of bed and face the world. Right?
Yeah, and it's something that is going to be, it's not like it wasn't needed before, but it's definitely going to be needed over the next 4 years, and that's just being real. So
that would be fair to say that yeah. stories of heroism and art are going to be very important, and so now we have to be courageous, and we have to be honest, and we just have to use our skills to do the best that we can. And, you know, day by day, you can't, you know, that's the way we're going to have to get through it. And we're going to have to get through it together. Like, these barriers that are dividing us, we're going to have to figure out ways to overcome them. Because the divisiveness that exists right now, and that is being further magnified, we cannot allow that to continue. If we can prevent it, let's prevent it. And one place in which we're all the same are stories.
Mm-hmm.
Stories, there are no barriers between them. So I think that's part of the gateway to different sides coming together.
Okay. And you know what? We're going to end it on that note because, like I said, at this point, I probably wouldn't have any money left in my purse.
Oh, man. Oh,
be all in the collection. Oh, I'm just keeping it real.
All right. Well, I'm glad to, you know, make a positive contribution. And, you know, it's like, this is our sustenance, man. We live off of stories, right?
Yes.
So it's like, I'm just hoping to, you know, work with these people to put some good stuff out there and keep it going. You know,
well, can't wait. May 6th, is that the correct day for Free Comics Day? Correct.
Saturday, May 6th, Free Comic Book Day. You should be able to go into like any like comic book store that participates in Free Comic Book Day and find Catalyst Prime, the event, the one shot, and you know, and get ready for a new adventure.
All right, guys. So you hear that. Don't forget. I'll be sure to remind you as much as I can. But yeah, so thank you, Joe, so much for joining me. I appreciate it so much.
Thank you for having me. And I'm glad I survived the experience. I don't always know if I can hang with you because you kill
see,
me.
See, I told you I got it all out earlier.
Twitter, man. It's like, oh, my God. So I'm glad I made it to the end of this.
See, I told you I would keep it tame, but. Oh. Okay, thank you guys for listening. And I just want to say I have a Patreon now. So if you haven't already and you can, go ahead and support me on there. I've been pretty good about releasing just extra content for Patreon subscribers. It's very between a Iron Fist trailer breakdown that I did with Lauren from Nerds of Prey to most recently the Sheathered on a Saturday that I did with Shannon from Nerds of Prey. It's always great when we team up. And a couple of written things. So if you haven't already, go ahead and check that out. There should be a website that will be available soon for the Lemonade Podcast. Just trying to get my monies in order because I would like to be able to post some things on there. And unfortunately, when you just do free, like, you're really limited. So that's the joys of the plus of having a Patreon, because I can go ahead and do that. And as always, you can follow me at Steph_I_Will and also the podcast at Lemonade Show on Twitter. And also you can please follow on SoundCloud, rate on iTunes and Audio Boom. And yeah, so thank you guys for joining me, and I'll catch you next time.